This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was The Minefield, heard two Wednesdays at 2:30, 2 p.m. Oh, get it together. The Minefield, it's just usually heard Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Live on the Fly with Randy Credico. That's coming up right about now. Stay tuned.
The Iraq War, famously, is a result of lies. Wars in Somalia are a result of lies. The Second World War and the German invasion of Poland was a result of carefully constructed lies. That is war by media. Let us ask ourselves, of the complicit media, which is the majority of the mainstream press, what is the average death count attributed to each journalist?
Hi, everybody. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico live on the fly on 99.5 FM, Free Speech Radio, WBAI, here in New York City, WBAI.org. Please support this station because we are not complicit in that death count here at WBAI. We must keep the station alive. That was Julian Assange at the very top of the show. And this week on Sunday is the two-year anniversary of his kidnapping from that embassy and his forced entry into one of the worst prisons on the planet, Belmarsh. There will be a demonstration and a press event at the UK embassy or its consulate on 2nd Avenue and 47th Street. And so look at this Sunday. NYC Free Assange are sponsoring that. So I got that out of the way. I have such a great show. And I also want to plug the book that you can get to support the station. It's In Defense of Assange, signed by Margaret Ratner, one of the two editors, along with Tariq Ali. And for a pledge of $50, it's yours, signed. So call 212-209-2950. Now, let me get to the show because I got like one of the greatest guests. And he's been on the show before. Thomas Drake is a former senior executive at the NSA, a decorated Navy and Air Force veteran, and an heroic whistleblower. In 2010, the government alleged that Drake mishandled documents, one of the few such Espionage Act cases in the U.S. history of that kind. Drake was, in fact, being persecuted for challenging the NSA's boondoggle, broad-spying trailblazer project. He is truly a profile in courage and an American hero and my hero. Thomas Drake, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Randy. Glad to be here.
It's always a thrill, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Tom, I just want to begin, since this is the two-year anniversary of this Sunday, of what happened to Julian at the Ecuadorian embassy and the persecution by the U.S. government. You heard the very top there. I just want to get your thoughts. We're talking about a guy who's peaceful, anti-war. Why is the government? What are your thoughts about that? Him as a person and the persecution?
Well, because as an international publisher, you know, he brought forward from sources, including whistleblowers and others, information that the powers that be, particularly state actors and particularly the United States and its quote-unquote partners and allies prefer not to have revealed to the public. And they're pretty ticked off. And if my case, which is the Secret Espionage Act case under Obama and all the other individuals, up to and including the latest, which is the signature Espionage Act case under Biden, which is Daniel Hale, is any indication. All of these have the press involved. All of them are painting huge targets on the press. And I think the government, U.S., is attempting, because Assange is, in their view, a lightning rod. And whether you like him or don't like him, and separate from, you know, personalities and character profiles and all of that, you have to deal with what was actually disclosed in the public interest. And it's not pretty stuff. I mean, it's just not, in terms of how far, especially U.S. power, but not just U.S., violates international norms, international law, you know, human rights, and a whole litany of other violations and wrongdoing. And they want to make an example of him. But the only way they can make an example of him under U.S. law, because he is he's foreigner in terms of the U.S., he's an Australian citizen, is they got to extradite him. And that's what's going on right now in the U.K. And if they can extradite him, you talk about Kafkaesque, they can't actually violate his First Amendment rights, quote unquote, because they do consider him a hostile state actor. So they can't violate his First Amendment rights until they bring him to the United States.
And then what happens?
You know, press freedoms. And they want to set a precedent, like they attempted with me, right, for quote-unquote leakers, right? In fact, the government has even called us leaktivists, right? People that deliberately provide information to the public interest that they wish to keep away from the public. So, yeah, they want to criminalize press freedoms, and they're looking to make an example of them, set precedent, because that now means they use the Espionage Act, and it's the only thing that's kept them from actually charging a U.S. press media outlet or a U.S. journalist or reporter is, you know, prosecutorial discretion up until now. So, yeah, once if they're able to do this, then that puts all media, all, you know, press outlets, all reporters and all journalists. And we even have a former attorney with the NSA who recently is on the record saying, oh, yeah, I'm glad that Daniel Hale got charged the espionage, but yeah, but what about the reporter? We need to charge him too. So you can see where this is going.
Yes, I Daniel Hale, we're going to do something on him next week. Daniel Hale, it's really and reality winner. Thomas, the last time you and I spoke on this show was along with Jesslyn Radak, back in December 30th, just 4 days before the judge ruled that he couldn't be sent to this country, but still remanded him. Citing prison conditions in the U.S. are horrific, and he shouldn't be sent on that reason. Are you surprised that, first of all, she put him back in prison, and that the U.S. government under Biden, the big progressive, is still pursuing, has appealed this case?
Nope, not surprised at all. This is part of the pathology of power. You know, once they sink their teeth into you, they're just not going to give up. They're just not. They're just going to keep going. Remember, this is national security reigns supreme in regards to how dare anybody, you know, question American exceptionalism. How dare anybody, you know, question our actions, right? Whether they're, you know, overseas military, you know, secret drone killings, or whether it's torture, surveillance, and everything else in between. Nope, they're just gonna keep going until they can't go any further.
Well, you know, Tom,
the conditions in Belmarsh are as bad as the reason why the judge chose not to extradite him, and then remanded him back to Belmarsh. I mean, it's like, wait a minute, the very conditions that based on all the testimony, right, all the evidence, and yet it still got remanded. I think in part, because that was a concern with me, right? Oh, flight risks. Oh, my gosh, we can't do that. They said that a Reality Winner, by the way. Oh, no, we got to keep her in prison. We have to keep her incarcerated because she might escape to overseas. Yeah.
It's outrageous. Your case, Tom, I'm looking at your past. Here you spent a lot, you know, years, decades serving this government. How did you make the switch? What made you decide back in the mid-2000s to actually unveil or disclose the kind of stuff that was going on by the NSA?
Well, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution for all that piece of paper is worth, right? It was an oath. And I wasn't going to break fidelity with that oath. And that oath is an oath to defend and support it against all enemies, not just foreign, but also domestic. I found myself defending the Constitution against my own government from within and from within a secret agency, which has the ability to secrecy, you know, hide its own actions, which is ultimately what the power of secrecy is. And you actually get to hide behind it to do the things that you don't want people to know about.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this Trailblazer project, which really was this broad-based, all-encompassing spying operation that they had put into place under your former boss, Hayden. But you went public, or you went to the Baltimore Sun, got many awards for this. Then they went after you. But and because of you, and I'm Reggie, if you could just cue up that that little pastiche by Ed Snowden. This is what Ed Snowden said in regards to your case.
And we actually have a number of cases throughout history where we've had individuals, even very senior executives of the National Security Agency, people like Thomas Drake, who was concerned with these kind of mass surveillance programs a decade before I was. And he went to the Office of General Counsel, the NSA, right, their legal office, and reported his concerns. He went to the DOD's Inspector General. He went to the Congressional Intelligence Committees. And in the end of this whole process, he was charged with precisely the same crimes that I was. And the thing is, when you are reporting to these people who are implicated, they're complicit in some kind of wrongdoing, a concern that what they're engaged in, that these policies themselves are unlawful or improper, they find ways to ignore it. And
well, so there you go. Obviously, he looked at your case and he, I guess you would concur, did the right thing, Tom.
Well, he knew based on my case and others that, remember, I'm the only one that was, you know, charged up until him in terms of under the Espionage Act for having disclosed vital public interest information linked to mass surveillance, especially the domestic side, which got exported overseas on an extraordinary scale. Snowden saw all that. And remember, Trailblazer was just a multi-billion dollar boondoggle. The actual mass surveillance regime that they put in place after 9/11 was called Stellar Wind. And that was the thing that they really came after before. That was a thing that was a super deep state secret. It was actually more secret than the torture regime, which started coming out earlier on. So it was so secret that it even had its own category, special compartmentalized category, to protect it. So the number of people that actually knew directly about the program or inside the program was actually quite small, as it turns out. So where Trailblazer is actually, well, both, but Trailblazer is a reflection of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned the nation about during you know, his farewell address in 1961, but most people sort of ignored it all. You have to remember post-World War II, I mean, people just didn't ask you that. We had an extraordinary footprint right after World War II. It was beginning to become the American century. The sun, quote unquote, had set on the British Empire, and now we were become the new empire. People get uncomfortable calling, you know, a Pax America, but in fact, that's what it became. We became, quote unquote, the empire. I mean, we're not just talking near abroad, we're talking far abroad in terms of all of our, you know, military footprint and facilities. And so I think Eisenhower was correct, even though he oversaw the extraordinary growth of that. What would this mean later on? That what I call actually a form of national socialism. I'm going to say that. I've never said that before. in terms of the military-industrial complex because, hey, let the largesse of U.S. Treasury just pay for umpteen billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars just to keep the beast going.
We are talking with Thomas Drake, whistleblower, an awardee of the Ridenour Prize for Truth Telling, and co-recipient along with Jesselyn Radak of the Sam Adams Association for Integrity in Intelligence Award. By the way, when you got that award, you quoted or you paraphrased Frederick Douglass in your speech at the Sam Adams Award ceremony. What prompted you to say or quote or paraphrase Frederick Douglass?
Well, because it's power. It's unbridled power. And he was an extraordinary abolitionist. I consider him. You talk about the long arc of history. He was definitely standing on it because of just the utter. I mean, slavery was just such an abomination, and here we are owning slaves for commercial purposes, right, and abusing at the same time. I mean, that's part of the original sin of America, even built into the Constitution, of all things. People right. Sort of forget our own history. I mean, it's this weird manifest destiny that we attempt to hold others to a very high standard, but when it comes to us violating those standards, well, we can because it's exceptionalism.
Right. Tom,
so this is all power politics. Remember, Randy, it's very easy to become incredibly cynical about the human condition over the millennia. The first to tell you this whole thing, power politics, you've got something I don't have. I don't like you. I don't like you either. I mean, I still remember, the Star Wars cantina scene, I'll be careful. You'll be dead. I mean, I'm wanted. Remember where that the guy was sitting there at the bar? I'm wanted in 12 star systems. Yeah, well, I mean, we just immediately go to our weapons? I mean, we've developed weapons now that can wipe out vast numbers of people and even conventional weaponry. I mean, it's all kind of in this weird weapon I call missile envy, which is all about power projection. I mean, I have real concerns right now about Cold War 2.0. It's like, even the United States, this whole thing with terrorism, that's just old. Just we're getting tired of it. Let's go back. Let's go back to the good old days. Let's go back to, we have real enemies like China and Russia. Wow, the last thing we need is ramping up the pot. I mean, I'm well aware. I mean, at Ellsberg, Gulf of Tonkin, that was a lie that got us into Vietnam, ramped it up, although we were already there. I'm familiar from the 1980s. With Abel Archer, how close we came to a nuclear disaster by accident. Even in the 80s, there's a couple of books that have been written about it in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
We need peace through diplomacy. I mean, Biden actually needs to have, there's just too much of that is, trigger happy, looking for excuses.
I mean, Tom, we are saber rattling with this guy, Tony Blinken, with both China and Russia at the same time, and both of them are armed to the teeth. Isn't this a little dangerous? And why don't they a little more cautious?
Extraordinarily dangerous. But see, you've got the same side of two sides of the same coin, neolibs and neocons. They're quite bipartisan in terms of the world view, right? And they would rather see it in black and white. It makes it a lot easier. It's always, remember, you got to remember Orwell and Oceania. There's always, there's always someone at war out there. So,
well,
that keeps it going. That keeps all the excuses going. We have enemies. We have threats. We have to spend hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, right? And under the illusion that's going to keep us safe. Look, you could chop $500 billion right off the defense budget and no one would blink an eye, except those who make a lot of money.
Right. That's a pretty bold request, cutting it down to $200 billion, but we'll never get that out of this Congress and this president or any in the future.
No, because it's bipartisan. That's the one. You don't get a whole lot of disagreement when it comes to the Armed Services Committee. Right? You don't. because, hey, whatever the government or the military wants, they're going to get. I mean, we're talking just mass. Remember, the two primary responsibilities of government from the preamble of the Constitution is providing for the general welfare and the common defense. We're sacrificing and have been for quite some time the general welfare in favor of the common defense. And we keep that illusion going by, quote unquote, all these enemies. And I know all the arguments are classic. Look, I lived Cold War 1.0. I knew it was peace through strength. You know, we had this massive armada, just in case, mutually assured destruction. It became extremely familiar. I used to monitor, right? We used to listen in on countries, ironically enough, so we wouldn't be surprised.
Wow.
And you know, we're seeing an erosion of even all the programs that are supposed to keep those trip wires well away from getting tripped.
Right. You know,
I'm open skies, the open skies treaty. Apparently the military doesn't want to do open skies. That's a whole nother dynamic. We don't have time to go into it. It's just that you want to keep this going. And I think what's happening is they gotten tired of counterterrorism. They gotten tired of all that stuff. Even though they're still doing that as well, right? We can do it all, right? We can do it all.
Right. Well, this is what Assange was saying in that speech up front. I mean, and this is one of the reasons why they don't want that kind of publicity around the damage of war and what could possibly happen if it really escalates between us and another superpower. And it's not just that. I think that when he released the Vault 7, that probably angered a lot of people in the intelligence community.
There's a lot of people been angered. There's even, you know, both liberals and conservatives are quite quote unquote quite angry. But he's just touching on a lot of these bright red lines and multiple third rails, right? And so they want to make a prime example of him. I realize there are people that have issues with him, you know, even within certain communities in terms of what appears to be, you know, a too close relationship with the Trump campaign, you know, going back to 2016. Yeah, you can have legitimate discussion about whether I should have kept away from all that. I understand the dynamics, right? But my gosh, the fact that it got yanked out of, remember, international law, if you're an asylee, you are supposed to be fundamentally protected. You can't just violate international norms because that sets an incredibly dangerous precedent. Oh, we're just going to yank him out of there. And you actually make arrangements with the host country because of a change in political leadership.
Right.
What does that tell you? I mean, all of this is extremely dangerous in terms of precedent. And I fear, I mean, remember, he's been incarcerated in some form, right? First being severely constrained in terms of movement, and then obviously he was in Belmarsh for a short time, right? And then ended up because he sought asylum and was accepted. We're talking 10 years now. We're going to 10 years. I mean, it's plus.
Preemptive attack on his ability. I said it's basically a preemptive attack on his ability to practice journalism.
They don't want him to practice journalism. They want him silenced. They want him gone. Look, if the U.S. gets its hands on him in the United States, I don't care it's going to be cause quite a stir. But the First Amendment will literally be on trial right alongside Julian. Because remember, the government has defined him as a hostile state actor, an intelligence actor operating on behalf of a foreign country, quote unquote. They don't consider him a publisher.
Right. Of course not. And of course, it would have implications. This is why I can't figure out, we only have a minute left, why the mainstream media is not circling the wagons. They're circling the firing squad.
Awkward. He's uncomfortable. And remember, he's foreign, we're domestic. But the thing is, it was noted in Chelsea Manning. I was there. I actually heard it from the prosecutor when asked, right? When asked, does it apply to Espionage Act? Can you apply it to like the New York Times, Large Post? Yes. It's no different. There's no special exemption. It's only been the discretion of U.S. prosecutors not to actually use the Espionage Act. It came close during the Ellsberg trial.
Right.
Because we've been the First Amendment was at stake even then.
Yeah. Well, Thomas Drake, I can't believe how quickly this time went by. Thomas, we're at the end of the show. We got to go to a news break. I got to get you back real soon. That was the quickest 23 minutes in the history of time.
Remember what Charlton Heston's character said. Remember in Planet of the Apes with George Taylor? He says the charred remains of the Statue of Liberty. And he says, he screamed because it was post-apocalyptic. You finally did it. You finally did it. You maniac. You blew it up. Well, that's what's at stake here.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, maybe the only Charlton. No, I like a few of them. Touch of Evil. I've been talking to NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake. Thomas, thank you very much. You're an American hero. And thank you for coming and supporting me at the lowest point in my life. We're going to go out with Little Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Thank you, Thomas.
No, you're welcome, Randy.
April 7th, 451, Attila the Hun sacks the town of Metz and attacks other cities in Gaul. April 7th, 1906, Mount Vesuvius erupts and devastates Naples. April 7th, 1933, Prohibition ends in the United States. April 7th, 1969, the Internet's symbolic birth date. April 7th, 2021, the date by which you must be enrolled in WBAI subscriber list. That's right, you must become a member for $25 or more to WBAI by this April 7th in order to vote in a very important election that could determine the continued survival of WBAI. April 7th, the date of record by which you must be a member. $25 a month, the basic annual membership rate to become a subscriber and a listener sponsor and a member of WBAI. Won't you do it now? The new pledge number, 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or pledge online at give2wbai.org. Once again, we have a new pledge number. It's 212-209-2950. Or give2wbai.org. But do it now, won't you? And do it with a credit card, because it's too late for you to mail in your pledges. And thanks for keeping us alive here at WBAI New York.
Your favorite radio station, listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, is taking a moment to let you know that WBAI is currently in an emergency membership drive, asking you to renew your membership if it has lapsed, or join WBAI right now, and also encourage your friends and your colleagues to join WBAI. Become a member. You can join WBAI for a contribution of $25 or more. That gives you a full year subscription membership to WBAI. Please call 212-209-2950 and say yes, you want to become a member of WBAI, or you want to renew your WBAI membership. have a short window, that's until April 7th, to increase memberships for a referendum vote this spring, which determines whether the current democratic structure of the Pacifica Foundation will continue. This bylaw referendum is being put forth by many of the same people who took part in shutting down WBAI in October of 2019. Again, WBAI is looking to increase our voting membership from now until April 7th. This will enable you to take part to vote yes or no to an upcoming referendum which relates to the democratic structure of the Pacifica Foundation. 212-209.